Welcome to the Terror Dome, baby.
We swarm.
Welcome to the Terror Dome.
We swarm. Let them know.
We swarm, baby.
We swarm, baby. All day long.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Tales from the Terror Dome. Man, we got a special one today, man. We got a Hokie legend in the building, man. Freshman All-American, first team All-ACC, third round draft pick by the Green Bay Packers, and most importantly, a Virginia son. His name's Aaron Rouse, baby. Y'all know him. How you doing, man?
Doing good, Dan. Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. Memorial Day weekend, man. Did you get to hit any cookouts, get any good plates, anything?
Yeah, you know, got a chance to go down in our area in the 757 and make sure we celebrate our veterans and those who who's made ultimate sacrifice for today that we can enjoy.
Nah, man, absolutely. Man, like I said, great to have you here. Virginia Beach, right? Colonial...
First Colonial High School, originally from Norfolk, but I grew up in both, in Virginia Beach and in Norfolk.
I got you. Yeah. And then, so multi-sport athlete, not only were you a football player, but you were also a hooper.
That's right. All city in basketball. That's right, Dan.
Yeah, man. It seems to be a lot of hoopers come from out there. I know Jimmy Williams used to tell me, I had Jimmy Williams on here, man. Jimmy Williams went for like probably 30 minutes on how much he could ball.
Oh, like, Jimmy was nice, man. Like, Jimmy had skills for days. Great, great, great player, great athlete, good guy.
I was watching your campaign announcement, and you were talking about how you had been working, like, your whole life you had jobs. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of wondering, like, what age was your first job? And also, what job was that job?
Yeah, man, like, so, you know, I'm from Norfolk, and my mom raised four of us. I got older twin sisters and a younger brother. I'm the middle child, and so my grandmother would help my mom take care of us by cleaning houses in the city of Virginia Beach. That's what my grandmother did. But unfortunately, like, she died from breast cancer at a young age of 49. And so when she passed, my grandfather, who was born in 1918, he was from North Carolina. He came from a family of sharecroppers. He was like, you're the house now. I was 10 years old. And he put a lawnmower in my hand. And he was like, take this lawnmower from Norfolk, Youngs Park, to be more specific, and take it across town to Ghent, to the Ghent neighborhood, because it was a more affluent area. Make money over there and come back and support your family. And since that point, I've been working. Farm Fresh, Target, McDonald's, Food Lion, Virginia Beach School Bus Garage, washing buses. I worked as a janitor throughout the summers to help make money to buy my school clothes as well. Then when I was in college, my freshman year in college, I'm sure we'll get to that, but I had a son my freshman year, and I had to come home. I got a job working in concrete and construction. So, yeah, man, I've been working since I was 10 years old.
Man, so, like, growing up, like, you not only were you playing all these sports, and anybody who's played sports knows on any level how time consuming it can be. It only gets more so the higher up you go. But like playing multiple sports, working and going to school, like that had to have been crazy, man.
It was a lot, man. You know, but you know where I'm from, and you know, it's historically underserved community. And so my mother, most important thing was just graduate from high school, don't join a gang, stay out the streets. And so I had like community leaders who were like coaches and everything that got me into football and into sports. And then from that point on, man, it just really took a village of not only coaches, but public educators, teachers, you know, to really say, you have a pathway to go forward, get an education. You know, the world is much bigger than what you see right now. And just always just reinforce what my mother was instilling in me and what my grandfather instilled in me about hard work and keeping your word and understand the value of your faith. And so for me, it was a lot as well, but it was one that, you know, it was a pathway for me to really not only change the trajectory of my family in terms of generational curses, but it was a way for me to start a new legacy, especially for my kids.
Man, what age were you when you put on the cleats for the first time?
I was 8 years old. I was playing for the the Norfolk, the Young Park Clovers down in Young's Park. And that's what I tell kids all the time. I said, I started when I was 8 years old. Man, I didn't know what I was doing, right? And I started off at tight end. And they just put me out there, and I was never afraid to hit, or I was, you know, physically, you know, aggressive, and I was just took to the game. And I just stayed with it throughout, you know, my life. And there was a point where in middle school, a good friend of mine, my math teacher in middle school named Jay Lane, it was a point to where I was gonna stop playing football because, you know, when you're in a team sports, your parents really create pathways for you to get playing time and talking to coaches and things like that. But my mom was always working, my dad wasn't there, so I really had nobody to really advocate for me. I had to advocate for myself. And I remember it was one time in middle school where I thought I should be playing a different position, and the coach wasn't trying to hear it. And I was like, well, I'm just going to go play basketball. I wasn't going to play. And I walked off the field. And there was a coach, Jay Lane, who was my math teacher. He also was my basketball coach. And he just, you know, he gave me a great, great conversation. Like, he just mentored me and, you know, told me, you know, basically told me go back out there. And here I am today.
Man, yeah, I always told my mom, like, don't say a word. I was like, do not make it worse for me. But yeah, like, I guess my only experience like that, I had a Little League coach, like my last year of Little League, man, he was an idiot, like, no disrespect. But like, I was just gonna hang it up. And I think my mom, like, called the varsity coach, and then the varsity coach just called my house, like, stop, man, you're gonna go play for me one day. You better stick with it. So I get it. But in high school, though, you played weak side. Was it weak? You played linebacker you played receiver, right?
I played everything in high school. I never came off the field. I played quarterback. I played receiver. I played running back. I played linebacker. I played safety. I played corner. I did it all in high school from start to finish. I never came off the field. Even in basketball, I played all positions from the point guard to center. So I just, you know, just a natural born athlete and just love competing and playing the game. And that's why, you know, the 1999 run from Virginia Tech when Michael Vick and Andre Davis and Ronnie Whitaker, and I can go on for the list all those names. But on that run, I was just excited. Like, that's, wow, college football. And then that very next year, Frank Beamer came to my high school and offered me a full scholarship to Virginia Tech. And I was only a junior. And I was like, what? Like, absolutely. Let's do it. Let's go. And so that was pretty much my pathway to college. I mean, we really never spoke about college in my family. My mother really, again, we couldn't afford it. So it was just graduate from high school. It just so happened, you know, I was really talented in football and in basketball, and I was being recruited in basketball as well. But when Frank Beamer offered me a full scholarship, you know, I wasn't going to leave that on the table.
But you're also AP 3A, like all team, like,
yeah.
And all people think now, players. Yeah, people now think 3A, that's not big, but back then it was the max, like triple, like, 3A was as high as it got in VA. Now I think it's like 6 or 7, but yeah. So your recruitment coming out of high school, though, was it, would you know Virginia Tech right away? But I feel like a lot of other people probably came with offers.
Yeah.
Like that.
I received letters far as UCLA and, you know, Tennessee, Michigan, all the Eastern states, from Georgia to Florida, Miami. I mean, I had recruiting all those folks, but for me, again, when you're young, and I really didn't understand the process of actually being recruited, like, you know, you do now, like I understand it now. And so two things that was important to me was to stay in state and to make sure my mom, I wasn't too far away from home to where I could still support my mom and my family, and my mom could come see me play. And so, you know, I remember Al Groh tried to recruit me to UVA. And I just wasn't feeling it. I'm just like, this is not just for me, you know. And then when Frank came around, and then, you know, obviously saw Mike and Ronnie Whitaker, who's from Norfolk and Young's Park, where I'm from. I was like, yeah, this was where I want to be. Then on top of that, I had some teachers who was they had some influence as well. They were Virginia Tech alumni, and so yeah. And once I took the visit to campus, it was easy to traverse, and so you know I felt at home.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, between Ronald Curry not going to UVA and Mike Vick choosing Virginia Tech, they kind of took the swag away from Charlottesville.
Yeah, most certainly. And I think, you know, when I took my full, because I was being recruited in basketball as well, and but when I committed to Virginia Tech, my basketball coach was like, well, they about to start recruiting you for basketball because now you committed to football. And that's the thing where I really, again, when you're young and you don't really have like too much of guidance in terms of the recruiting process, you know, you realize that, wow, I didn't know I was being recruited like that in basketball as well. I was just a kid who was playing sports, who was working, who was just trying to take care of his family. And so once again, Virginia Tech offered me that full scholarship, I was like, that's where I'm going. Like I can't leave this on the table. So,
yeah. And then you get on campus first summer, you got there because early enrollment wasn't a thing then, right? Yeah. You went in the summer. Yeah.
Yep.
So like you get to Blacksburg, like what was that like being from, you know, cause you from, you know, the 7-5 and then you get to Cowtown, Virginia and Blacksburg, like that had to have been a bit of a shock.
Not too much a shock for me because I mean I'm really laid back and so I'm really a country boy. Like I don't do too much. Just give me like t-shirt, jeans, and my fishing rod. You know, I can do that. I ain't getting in the ocean though. But going out to Blacksburg, you know, my mother and I, we had to find a ride first. And so we got a ride to get all my stuff there and the community. I mean, I had like high school coaches and teachers put together and got me a little mini fridge, you know, and they made sure they just supported me. The community just embraced me and supported me. And my mom, we got a ride there. And like when we pull up on campus, you know, moving in day, because all the athletes had to come early and we had to go to Cochrane. And so my mom was just like, just dropped me off and was like, baby, like make the most of it. You know, like this is it. And hugged my mom and she left and I was on my own. It was that. Like I couldn't, you know, I couldn't call home or be like, send me some more money or I'm homesick or, you know, this is tough. It's like you here. You gotta, it's like no retreat, you know, you gotta go forward. And so I think what really made a difference for me was my teammates, you know, coming in and knowing it was guys from around the state, the whole entire Commonwealth. From 757, you know, from Nova, 703, 540, Blacksburg, you know, it was so many different guys. And that's when, you know, you really start building the relationships with guys, you know, Mike Emo, Brendan Hill, Jimmy Williams, you know, Marcus Vick, like, you know, Robert Parker, DJ Parker. I mean, I can go on and on and on. So many guys who you just build relationships with. That made it seem like, you know, you wasn't 5 hours from home. You were home. So that's why I think really did it. And we had the leadership, you know, and guys like, you know, Ryan Whitaker and Jim Davis. And, you know, we had so many guys that was just already there. Brian Randall, guys who just set the tone of what leadership and what it was supposed to look like.
And then you came in, I guess. I mean, you said you had a kid right away, like you were working a job. Like people, like D1 football at that point. I mean, it's a job now still, but it was it was not a paid position at that point.
That's right.
So, like, how do you do all that stuff, all the classes, all the work, be there with Frank and Bud, and also work a
Man,
job?
I thank God because now, you know, traveling the Commonwealth statewide, I just be scratching my head. Like, I don't know how I was able to do the things that I've did, but it's one of those things where we played Air Force in the San Francisco, I think it was the Almond Bowl.
I remember that.
You remember that? And
yeah,
we won that game by like 3 points, but it was my first time being like really like going to California and flying in the air for like 5 hours and stuff like that. And I remember my high school sweetheart and I was like, we're going to have a kid together, a child together. And I just remember my mind just going into, oh, I'm going to be a better father to my son than my dad ever was to my family. And so I had to talk to Coach Beamer. I had to talk to Coach Beamer, Brian Steinspring, Bud Foster. I had to sit those guys down. I was like, listen, like, I can't stay here in the springtime and get, you know, acclimated to football and campus. You know, I was like, I have to go home. You know, I'm going to have a child. And Frank and everyone expressed their concern that I wasn't going to return. And I was like, no, I'm going to return. You know, I'll give you my word. And I'm just, you know, an 18, 19-year-old kid saying, yeah, I'll give you my word. I'm going to return. They were probably like, yeah, okay. And so, excuse me, I came home and got a job working in construction, got a job working concrete. And it was tough. I mean, waking up 4:30 in the morning, you got to be on the job site at 6, make sure all the tools there. Then you're working in the Virginia heat, humidity. But it kept me in shape now that I think about it. But I was the youngest man on the concrete line. And then so all the older gentlemen was just dropped different gems on me and everything throughout the day. And then when I got off at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I would go to the football field behind my community and I would just go work on my footwork. You know, I'm 6'4", so coach was like, oh, you gotta make sure you know, bended knees, stay low. So I just worked on that. And when I returned to school that fall in August, you know, everybody was so surprised, like, he's back, he's in shape, he looks great, he passed his conditioning test with flying colors. And I had to tell Frank, I was like, well, coach, I gave you my word. And I was like, and I had to break it down. I was like, well, you know, when my grandfather instilled in me when I was 10 years old that I was the man of the house, he gave me 3 important principles to live by. He said, keep God first, work for everything that you want, and your word is your bond. And so when I gave you my word, like, I gave you my word. And from that point on, like, you know, I became a captain and a leader of the team. And then, you know, my schedule consisted of school, training, weight room, you know, football practice, film study, all the football stuff. I get all my work done in study hall before 11 o'clock. And then I would try to get all as much as work as I can done before we play, like, on Saturday. So, because after the game, what I would do is I was hopping my grandfather's old Chevrolet Caprice. And then I would, after we played a 3.5-hour game, kicking somebody's butt, I would drive 5.5 hours all the way home back to Virginia Beach to see my family, because I wanted them to understand. I wanted my child's mother to understand, like, we were in this together. Like, I'm not just off at college having this great time. Like, when we decided to have this child, that we were going to be in this together. And so that was my schedule, you know, is weight room, film study, football, school work, get papers done, finish your paperwork at night. Next morning, practice, school work, papers done, call home, drive home, then come back. And then 2 years later, going into my sophomore year, redshirt sophomore year, my younger brother, he didn't have any plans after college, you know, because after high school, we couldn't afford college. And so I brought him to come live with me at Virginia Tech as well. So I was a dad, I was a student, I was an athlete, and I was also taking care of my younger brother in college.
Dang. So every spring, did you go home and work and then come back?
Every spring I would go home. And then what happened was, I would, my brother would be with me then. And so I would just be home in the spring and just train, get healthy, get, you know, stay in shape. And then I would just be ready for football in the season. And so my brother as well, and that's the other thing, like, you know, Virginia Tech was so, the coach was so good to my brother because he had access to everything, you know. So I had this way I can make sure I didn't lose my brother to the streets. And so I made sure to keep an eye on him. And now he's got a great career, great job, because I made sure, you know, to have that talk with him, like, you're going to be a man one day. What you going to do? And he got certified in HVAC and plumbing. And now he's He's been in the industry over 20 years, a regional director of maintenance. He just got top 40 under 40 in the state of Virginia. So he's doing very well for himself.
That's awesome, man. I feel like those jobs are like more and more, there's more and more need, especially as we keep building everything, you know, like things are just getting thrown. Like I'm in Northern Virginia, man, and I feel like they just throw townhouse communities up. Like man, one day they start building, the next day it's built. So like, hey, I know they're raking it in.
Yeah. It's an important field, man. And we need more skilled labor. I think, you know, it's probably, we get into a deeper conversation, but our children need to understand just because you don't go to college, it doesn't mean you're not successful, you know? And I think, you know, for my generation, it's just, man, go to college. And now it needs to be, you know, hey, you can do either or, and you can go to college and get a skill. And so I think we just make sure we're talking about that for our youth who some just don't want to go to college, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's not for everyone. I feel like it takes a specific person. Like, and then as like, I feel like when I was coming out of high school, like college was pushed. It was like, you gotta like, it was the thing. Like if you didn't go, like people looked at you like off, you know, like they that kind of like side-eyed you. But now it's like, hey man, if you want to go get a trade, then that's well respected.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need it. We need it. So, but yeah. So then, I got drafted by Green Bay, and then I had a great solid career, and then I got into a bad car accident that basically brought it all down.
Yeah, you got drafted. So that you went first team All ACC, and then you decided to come back to school. What made you decide to come back for your senior year versus try out the draft?
My word. I gave my mom my word. I would graduate before I go to college. Before I go to the NFL. And came back, made sure I got my degree. And so I got my degree first and then went to, got drafted in the NFL.
Whose decision was it to move you from linebacker to safety?
Oh, it was my decision. it was my decision. But it's one that, you know, I give all credit as well to Frank Beamer, you know, my position coach, and wanted me to move. And I was like, no, I want to play safety. I can play safety because I did it in high school. And I was all, you know, I was all state in all Tidewater in high school. So I was like, yeah, I can play that. And my position coach pushed back hard against it. But I went and had a conversation because, again, I couldn't call home to my mom and say, my coach won't let me change positions, and you know, and I was always taught that you know, if you got a problem, then you go and talk to the head, like have that conversation. Don't just sulk and be upset. Like go and have a conversation, you know. And so I spoke to Coach Beamer, you know, man to man. I had a conversation with him. Said, listen, you know, I just want an opportunity. Just give me an opportunity so I can play. And he said, okay. I give you an opportunity. And then the first game we had was in I had that safety was in North Carolina State, you know. And I remember I had like two picks. I had a touchdown that game. Daryl Tott had a script sack, and I picked it up and I scored. But they, you know, and the referees was on a different one. But then I had the game saving interception. So after that, it was, you know, it was all done. It's all done.
You also had a later in the league, you had a game changing interception off of Calvin Johnson.
Oh yeah. Thanksgiving Day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that like, man? So you get drafted by the Packers in the third round and you're relatively new to the team. And there's all that media buzz like around the Packers. Cause it was like, is Brett Favre coming back? Is Aaron Rodgers taking over? Oh no, we told Brett to go home. Like, how hard was it to focus with all that stuff going on?
I mean, it's for me, it's just every day. It's the NFL, you know, and you now, you know, my story, it's just another day in the league. You know, you got a job to do and you try to focus on what your job is. And, you know, again, Brett Favre, 20 years my senior, you know, that's going to work itself out. To me, I was just trying to establish and show that, yeah, I belong and I can play in this league. And so I remember that Thanksgiving Day interception, and you know, that was big for me. I just love playing the game, but the NFL is most certainly a business. I mean, from top down to, you know, it is unlike college football. And I think that's what most young players or collegiate players need to understand is it is a business, regardless of how you feel, you know, the X's and the O's is on the field, right? But end of the day, what pushes those X and O's is the business side of things.
No, that's a fact. And obviously, like, after you worked 80 million jobs and played sports at the same time, like, the NFL seemed like you had one job. It might have probably a little easier as far as, like, schedule, though the schedule is crazy.
Well, football was my outlet. Always had been my outlet. It was just a way to be around, you know, the guys, and, you know, it was fun. It was just fun and taking guys and communicating that I may come from different walks of life and just figure out how can we be like the best. That's what I enjoyed.
Yeah. Now I know why you hit so damn hard. It makes sense now. But then you got to come home. Mm-hmm. And play for a team that only the real ones remember, the Virginia Defenders.
Destroyers.
Yeah, the Destroyers, my fault.
Yeah.
And won the UFL championship where you had three picks in that game.
That's right.
You were the MVP.
That's right. Yeah.
What was it like, man, coming home and it wasn't the NFL, but it was still ball. And you got to play at home.
It was a real treat because Marty Schottenheimer, who was a, you know, legendary NFL coach, in his own right, who was like, listen, you know, I'm starting this team. I know you've been in it, you know, Carson, and I know you want to get film to try to make it back to the league. Like, come play for him. It's in your hometown. And so I was home. I was like, all right, you know, I'll play. But it was great. The football side of things was great. Obviously, the business side of thing, how it unfolded the first time was just awful. I felt so bad for many of my guys that I played with, because the league just didn't do right by the players. But, you know, we still went out there and won a championship together, you know, had those three interceptions, one for a touchdown. And, you know, and it was one of those things where it was playing in my hometown in front of the community that helped me get to college, helped me get to the NFL, and helped me play for the Destroyers. It was great to see, to put on a show for them and to have a championship for them. So that's one of the things that, like, in the outer atmosphere for folks is underappreciated. But here and for me, it's probably one of the most, you know, meaningful things I've done in far as sports is to play in a championship game in front of my hometown.
And then once ball was over, mm-hmm. like, what, there was a period of time that I'm not sure, like, you know, then you popped up on the radar. Now you know, you're running for office. But, like, what were you doing between football and that first at-large seat that you won?
Yeah, so, like, when after we won the championship game, I just knew the NFL was going to call. You know, I was like, yeah, I'm just waiting. When they going to call, you know, MVP of a championship game, three picks, I'm just waiting. And my agent called me and was like, yeah, well, you know, the NFL, you hurt your neck. So, you know, NFL concussion was really getting off. It was really being hard on that. And it was like, you know, no team is going to take a chance. So I was really bummed out about that. And then I had a good friend of my family named James Church. He was like, hey, come go to Richmond with me. Because it was like, he was in the auto industry and it was like lobby day. And I was like, nah, I'm good. He was like, no, come go to Richmond. You know, you're going to help us meet some important people and senators and delegates. And, you know, you're Aaron Rouse. You're a legendary Hokie. You play for the Packers. They'll love to meet you. And you're going to help us out. And I was like, no, I'm good. I don't want to go. And he was like, well, I'll buy you dinner. And I was like, all right, what time you want to leave? So we get to Richmond and the light bulb went off, man. You know, I graduated with my degree in sociology from from Virginia Tech. And I remember Nick and Giovanni, may she rest in peace. I just remember all her teachings and being in her class just come to light, and why it's so important that we support like our humanity, and why it's important to elect like good people of upstanding character to these positions of authority and influence that could, you know, make sure the resources are allocated for everyone. And so for 3 years, I just studied. I had an open invitation in Richmond from General Assembly members on both sides of the aisle, because everybody loved football, and, you know, and they were like, just come up here and learn. You know, if you want to come back, just come back. So I would go to Richmond. I say, well, what do you do? And they would tell me. I sit on this committee, and this is what we do on this committee. Okay, what do? I sit on this committee or this board, and this is what we do. And so for 3 years, I studied, I learned state politics. And then I said, I'm ready for public office. And they were like, okay, well, all right, what house district do you live in? And I was like, house district? I was like, no, I don't want to run for Richmond yet. You know, I'm going to run for local office. I want to run for my city council back home, because I need to be able to make a difference there. If I can't make a difference at the local level back home, I'll be no good here in Richmond. And everybody was kind of like, okay, local politics is messy. It's, you know, it could be a hornet's nest. And so it didn't matter to me, because I wasn't running for like a title or position. I was running to make a difference. And so I came home and ran for Virginia Beach City Council and got elected with the most votes ever in a Virginia Beach election.
Talk to him. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And then just went to work. You know, I think for many folks, we're really surprised, because, you know, not everybody watches sports. We like to think everybody does, right? But not everybody watches sports, and particularly in the political arena. And so a lot of folks thought I just stepped off the football field. They didn't see, like, for 3 years, like, I was in Richmond learning, you know, state politics. And so after that, you know, I went and made sure our city staff and workers, including our first responders, I made sure they got the highest pay increase they had in over 30-some years. I helped fully fund and expand the Summer Youth Employment Program. I passed an infrastructure bill that would support and mitigate climate change and sea level rise as well. I worked with our Commissioner of Revenue to cut the car tax, find tax relief for our seniors, and then protect voting rights. And so I got opportunity when the Senate District 7 became open. It was a special election, and they were one government and folks wanted to take away women's rights. And I was like, nah, we not having that. You know, we not doing that. And so I stepped up. I ran in a district that Republicans had won by 5 points, and folks were like, don't run in that district. Like, it's too red. You need to wait. Wait till next year, because new lines would be drawn. And the next year, the district would lean Democrat more. And they forget. It's like, I really don't, that doesn't matter to me. You know, I didn't care if it was a red district. I was running because women and human rights are being taken away, which is something I don't stand for. And so I ran in that district and flipped that district, and I became the first Black senator to be elected to the Virginia Senate that represents the city of Virginia Beach. And then from that point on, you know, I've been effective because, again, I knew state politics, but also how, you know, that mentality coming from sports and football, I don't, like, you know, again, I don't necessarily matter to me what side of the aisle you on. What matters to me are the issues and where can you support, you know, the issues, whether it's supporting our veteran community, which I passed that bill, extending the earned income tax credit for children and working families. Can you support tax relief for our seniors and those with disabilities? Making sure, try to stop homelessness, support those bills. Can you support the NIL bill that I passed as well? Can you support the Save Local Pharmacy bill that's historic for Virginia, that's going to make sure we can keep rural, our rural communities, make sure they can have access to quality health care and lower costs? And like, and then on top of that, I led the Senate basketball team to this first victory over the House in 9 years. And so,
let's go. Yes, sir.
In 9 years with bipartisan support. And so, like, I have great relationships on both sides of the aisle. And I'm very clear on where I stand on the issues. But what I don't ever do is I'll never disrespect someone, particularly if they, you know, in the opposite party, because they have a different perspective or outlook. You know, I think we have to have a sense of civility. And what I learned from Virginia Tech and coming from there is also humility, and especially in football. It's like, you're not going to be able to get the tackle every single play. You know, sometimes you got to spill or take on that block so your teammate can get the tackle, your teammate can make the get the big interception, you know, or you take on that block so the run back can get the touchdown. And that's the thing about, I think the beauty of especially football, is that you need all 11 guys on that field moving in the same direction, going in the same direction so we can win and hopefully be successful. And if we don't win, then we got opportunity like to fix it and try again. So that's how I approach politics. It's like, all right, you may be on the defensive side. You may strictly be a special team player, which, like, okay, that's fine with me. Like, but this is what our goal is. Our goal is to win. And what do I consider winning? Are we improving the lives of everyday Virginians? All right, if we're doing that, like, we win it. And that's what yielded me so much support, not only in the General Assembly, but throughout Virginia.
Yeah, that PBM bill was massive that you passed. Oh,
man. It was probably one of the, you know, the biggest and one of the biggest defining legislations of my political career that's going to have tremendous support and benefit our Virginians across the Commonwealth, where you can help lower healthcare costs, lower prescription costs, and you save money on a state level, but you can keep rural pharmacies open as well as in the urban communities. And it was so tough because you had the pharmacies, you had hospitals, you had different stakeholders, everybody, you had to bring everyone at the table. And my belief and outlook is you have to address like your issues head on, right? Like, I need to know like where do you stand? And because if you don't, how do I begin to fix the issue, right? If I don't know where you stand. And so I like to get all the stakeholders in the room. You know, I carry a sense of presence being 6'4", 230. So I typically, you know, can receive everyone's willing participation and attention. And then you go to work. You first of all, as you lead, you don't lead with the sense of you're doing it my way. At least I don't lead like that. I lead of, hey, we're all here. Like, where is everybody? Like, tell me where you are. This is where I am. And can we get to the middle ground, right? And be pragmatic about our approach, like realistic approach. Like, don't come in like with some like complete non-starter, you know, no one is like, let's take a realistic approach that we can build a strong piece of legislation that's going to benefit Virginians. And we did. I'm so happy. My House colleague, Delegate Katrina Carlson as well. And everyone involved. And this was a bipartisan bill. I mean, it's a really big bill. We had two Republican senators. I think more than maybe three signed on to it. We had two House folks. We had a Delegate Pillion. I mean, Senator Pillion, Senator Hackworth. We had Delegate Kilgore, Delegate Watchman, all Republicans who also signed on the bill. And then it passed out the General Assembly, like, you know, 40-0 with unanimous support. And so this is something that benefited every single Virginian throughout our Commonwealth. And that's what it's like, you put together the team and you go out there and you win, right? That's how you win. And it's the same approach. It's, again, in football, if you're playing against, you know, Adrian Peterson, right? And AP is gushing the A-gap all game long. And at halftime, if you don't go and fix that or address it, like, you're going to lose. You know, it's like, so let's fix the issue that we see, and hopefully that, you know, that'll win, that'll help us win the game.
Yeah, man. Because these days, I feel like I'm not a real political person. Like, by nature, like, I don't understand a lot of the language. But, like, I know, like, as far as, like, human rights, like, I know what I feel is right and wrong. And I feel like a lot of days, or a lot of times now, especially, like, debate culture is more like somebody not listening to listen, but to listen to get over on the next person and become a meme. And it's kind of like, what if we just took these politicians – one-on-one Oklahoma drill. No, I'm joking, but like, but like, it's you know, you're running for lieutenant governor now. It's a big position in the state of Virginia. Like, what would you tell people in like a brief summary, like just real stripped down, like I'm endorsing Aaron Rouse, so I need like, but for other people that need to know, like, real like stripped down summary, like why Aaron Rouse, besides the fact that you're a Hokie legend.
Well, I think, you know, I not only am a fighter, but I'm an effective leader. And I'm the only one in this race that has the local and state experience and a record of working in a bipartisan manner that backs it up, you know. And that is why I'm so well respected throughout not only General Assembly, but throughout the Commonwealth. Last thing I would say is it's important to, you know, have myself, someone like myself that understands legislation, that understands the General Assembly, that understands how to get things done. Most people don't even know what Lieutenant Governor does, right? And the Lieutenant Governor pretty much presides over the Senate, and you only get a tie-breaking vote. And so it's important that the colleagues within the Senate respect the person that's in that well. And that is something that I've earned from my colleagues. And yeah, and it makes me the best person for the job.
Affordable housing, tax relief for seniors and families.
That's right.
Kids education, because that's definitely a big one. And reducing healthcare costs, which everybody's got to take. Everybody needs some sort of attention at some point in their life. So it's probably the most important thing ever.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And, you know, and again, it's having the ability to be effective and get things done. I also chair our state's Privileges and Elections Committee. And so as chairman of that committee, it's my responsibility to not only protect voting rights and to make sure, you know, every eligible voter in Virginia can vote, but also make sure there is due process if there's an issue with someone's voter registration. So making sure that happens is also very, very important to me as well.
Absolutely. And who do I speak to about being able to bet on Virginia Tech and bet against UVA? I feel like we're leaving a lot of money on the table here for the state.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know who you would talk to about that one. But
Aaron, man, Senator Aaron Rouse, I know you're busy. It's campaign season. I appreciate you taking all this time out of your day to come on here and talk to me and, you know, let the people know, like, what you've been up to, probably a lot of things they didn't know, and more importantly, why they should vote for you to better Virginia.
Please vote for me. You know, early voting has already started now. Early voting goes until June 14th. The primary date is June 17th. That is the primary date. But please vote for Aaron Rouse for Lieutenant Governor. Go to my website. It's easy. It's simple. It's Rouse for Virginia. That's F-O-R, Virginia spelled out, rouseforvirginia.com. Follow me on Instagram as well. And look, I'm an open book, so you can pretty much shoot me a message, to email, reach out to me, and you will see me at a few games this year, upcoming year as well. As if you haven't already seen me in the past, I usually try to make two games in Tech throughout the year. So,
yeah, man. I guess my last question is: how do you feel about the current, you know, regime? Like, like Coach Pry seems like be making real efforts to keep the alumni involved and around. So it feels like he's trying to get it back to a modified version of what that old feeling was.
Yeah, listen, I think Coach Pry is great. I think he's what we need right now. And not only that, the relationship building he's done with alumni, not only of the football team, but of the university has been, you know, outstanding. I think we also have to understand the realization that it is a completely different landscape in college right now, especially because of NIL. And so, you know, we have someone that really understands like the culture of Virginia Tech and what it means to bring the hard hat mentality. And so I think that is a victory and plus in itself. And now we just have to make sure that not only are we embracing our football team and Virginia Tech athletics, but we're financially supporting them as well, because that's the landscape now in college sports. Is you got to be able to have the resources to recruit and attract these kids, and not like it used to be when I was coming up, and you know it was more so looking at other guys and trying to, hey, you going here? Yeah, we're going to go play at Virginia Tech together and try to, you know, build that team. Now these, you know, these athletes are different. They can monetize off their names, which I think they should be able to, because it's a multi-billion-dollar industry. I think Coach Pry, what he's doing and what he's trying to do, we got to support that. Lastly, I would say is folks need to remember there was a time where Frank Beamer first started out, he didn't do so well, you know, and we stuck with Frank and look how that turned out. I mean, he's a College Hall of Fame head coach. And so I would say, listen, for Coach Pry, we got to support our team, support Virginia Tech football, and I know we'll be all right.
Hell yeah, man. And, hey, you wore a lot of different numbers throughout your career. You wore a few. But the most important one is that you're number one for Virginia, baby.
That's good, Dan. I like that.
Yes,
sir. I like that. That's solid. I like that.
Yeah, man. Go Hokies.
Go Hokies. Let's get it done. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. This has been great.
Absolutely, man. Now we appreciate you and what you're going to do.
Thanks, man. We're going to do this together, though. What we going to do together? I can't do it by myself.
Oh, yeah. No, it takes everyone.
That's right. What we going to do together.
Absolutely.
That's right.